This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase.
The Southern Ground Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Spartan Forge. It's forged in combat and tailored for hunters. Spartan Forge stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting to deliver truly intuitive and science-based products that save the hunter time spent scouting, planning, and executing their hunts. You can start your free 14-day trial today by visiting spartanforge.ai, and you can use the code SOUTHERNGROUND, that's all lowercase, all one word, SOUTHERNGROUND at checkout, and that'll get you 25% off of your purchase. If you're wanting to know more about saddle hunting, well, check out tetherednation.com for all your saddle hunting needs. Tethered is for saddle hunters by saddle hunters, and they're redefining ultralight hunting. If you'd like to support the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, you can visit patreon.com/southernground hunting, or you can click on the link in the show notes of this podcast episode. We offer two different tiers for our patrons that offer a solid list of benefits. We'd love for you to join the Southern Ground Hunting community today. Again, that's patreon.com/southernground hunting. And now, let's get to the show. All right, everybody, on the phone with us today, we have Mr. Jim Forbes. Jim, how's it going over there? You're in Virginia, correct?
Yes, sir. I'm in the southwest part of Virginia in the mountains.
Okay, so talking about Virginia mountain bucks, which is something that is pretty fun to talk about.
It's something pretty fun to talk about because they grow them big up there.
Yeah.
They grow them big.
They do get, they get significantly bigger.
They grow them big,
And Jim, I don't know, we talked a little bit about it. We talked a little bit about habitat and things the other day. But kind of explain to us the habitat type and the terrain that you're hunting up there in the mountains of Virginia.
Okay, well, it's, you know, pretty steep. We have actually two mountain systems here, the Appalachians and the Blue Ridge Mountains, and they both run very steep, you know, a lot of elevation changes, and there's a lot of different scenarios that you can run into as far as in regard to hunting. And so I think it makes it way more challenging because of that. You got to really, you know, play the wind, so to speak. That really makes a huge difference here. And, you know, it's such a big area too that it makes it more challenging to try to pin one down, so to speak.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit the other day, and you talked a lot about, you know, times when you've taken other people out with you or things like that, and you just don't seem to see deer in numbers. Can you kind of talk about that? Because you obviously have a good track record. My buddy Devin Duncan is who recommended you for the podcast, and so I know you have a good track record of killing big bucks, but from what me and you talked about the other day, you don't necessarily always see a ton of deer. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Well, yeah, the population is pretty low. Plus, you know, you got to factor in your food sources change from year to year, with the acorns as being your main crop, you know, of what you would hope for in November and in October and November. And if, you know, you have limited acorns, or I've hunted quite a few years there was no acorns, that really becomes difficult. And, you know, plus a lot of years, you know, the acorns are spotty, which means, you know, one ridge may have acorns and the very next ridge over may not have any. Well, you know, that's, as you know, the deer are, you know, they're going to be where the food is. And so that's where, you know, your boots on the ground really becomes very relevant. And, but, you know, I try to limit my scouting as much as possible in the fall, because then you're putting out a lot of scent and that creates another issue. But, food is everything, and the wind is a lot. And, you know, that you try to, you know, find those places. I like to have multiple places because of that. I should hunt probably in this upcoming season four or five completely different habitat places, different counties, that kind of, you know, then move around till you get to where you start maybe seeing some deer. But as far as the population goes, it's probably declining in the mountains in many areas due to predators. And so, you know, you may could go days without seeing a deer. So that's where I think, you know, doing the things that I normally do gives you the confidence to kind of stay to it. And so you know, because confidence is that you're in the right place, keeps you there so you don't move around and, you know, give up on a place that you know should be a good place, that sort of thing. So I do a lot of moving around. I might be in one county one day and a completely different county the next day.
What are
it's based on the winds, based on all those factors.
What are the things you're looking for in a mountain-type area that just scream like a big buck should live here?
Well, you know, obviously remoteness is a factor, and it's not as much of a factor for me now because I'm getting older. So, but if somebody in their prime, remoteness is a great thing. I think you'll find in these mountains around here, there's always a mature buck or two in just about most places. because it, you know, they get smart. You know, it's challenging to hunt them. There's a lot of area. So the things I'm looking for are where are the food sources? Where's your access? I don't like to go out. If I'm hunting a public land, I don't like to go out logging roads where there's a good parking spot. I try to look for where there's a hill or something challenging the first part of it to get away from that. Most likely people would say, no, I'm not going in there kind of thing. And you know, you're also looking for terrain features. And there's a lot, and as I told you the other day, terrain features, you know, you got your ridges, your main ridges, your secondary ridges. You got saddles. You got, I like, one of the places I like is where the main ridge, main finger ridges turn up and hit the main mountain. And that usually, you know, and then you look for a lot of laurel around there. Any funnel type situations, is there rocks that might funnel them to a certain spot through there? You know, that sort of thing where it narrows down. So as many characteristics as you can find together, I think, increases your odds. And that's really what it's all about in this game, is trying to pick out the places that are the most likely places. And to do that, I think a map's like a starting place. And I think you got to scout. And you got to scout a lot and really know your areas. I'd rather have less areas that I know good, areas that I don't. So those, you know, you stick with the, you pick the places, and you go around, you kind of think like a big deer. Why would a big deer come through here? Where are they going to come from, and where are they going to? And then you pick out the highest probability places. And I like to stick with those places because I think if you don't, then you're just going to be all over the place. And if you stick to those few places and really believe in them and spend a lot of time thinking about those places, then you're more likely to sit still, which we all know is a big factor in killing deer, is sitting still and having confidence in where you're hunting.
You know, Drew, that's something that we hear a lot of guys, especially in this Local Legends series, mm-hmm. we hear them talk about these same type of things that that Jim is talking about. And a lot, a common theme among a lot of the Local Legends guests in the past is they hunt very smart but very few places compared to a lot of people. You hear guys... Dan Infaults, John Eberharts, a lot of those, like, you know, bigger name mobile mm-hmm. hunting yeah. guys that have killed a lot of bucks, they talk a lot about sitting in one tree, and if you don't see anything, you don't go back there, you know, or whatever. Right. But I see a theme, especially among guys in mountains and guys in the Southeast that yeah. may be mountains or not, but Southeastern
seem to ride it out. Just a little longer.
A little bit longer. So, Jim, tell me, like, when you have a spot, what I'm imagining is you have several, you know, really good areas that you have high confidence in. Is there ever a moment that you give up on those areas in the season?
Not if I'm going to hunt that place. Now, you know, like I said earlier, you know, food is everything. So if I've got a mountain that's 20 miles away that has a lot of acorns in it, you are seeing deer. You see the sign of big ones there, and you got another place that it looks like it's just not the place this year. I don't give up on the place so much. I might give up on the year of it. Mm-hmm. That this year is not that for that place. And that's why, you know, my GPS, I filled up one GPS back in the day. In my prime, I absolutely filled it up. with points, weigh points to you know, have like redundancy in places because just in case something happens. What if other people come in there and kill the buck you're after? Or, you know, there's usually more than one in there, but if they're, you know, what if you're driving up to your place and you see the buck you've been think is in there, got a picture of, and he's dead on the side of the road. Somebody ran him over. Things like that that you have no control over. So I'm a believer in having about 10 places. But okay. I'm not going to go to all 10 of those places. I'm going to stick with the 4 or 5 that I think I have the best opportunity with. And I don't give up on places because I've spent hours and hours and hours not only scouting it but thinking about it. I do a lot of, you know, reflection when I do get a spot and, you know, why is this good? Why is it, you know, why would this be a good place? I one time killed one of my biggest bucks. I hunted for about 5 years in this spot 2 or 3 times a year, and I never saw a deer. And the first deer I saw was a really nice buck. So that's a good place. I don't get to hunt that place anymore, but, you know, you just got to believe in what you're doing. And I think that's a lot. I really do. Because I've seen people just give up. Like, well, I've hunted 3 or 4 times here. I haven't seen a deer. Well, but is it a good spot? You know, is that a place a big deer, which are a lot different than most deer, would come through at the right time? And then you just put your time in. You find the right places, and you believe in them, and then you put your time in, and eventually I feel like you will have a good chance. And will every 100% of every place you pick work out? No, I don't believe that. But it's going to take a while for me to say that I need to move on.
That's interesting. I want to talk about those quote-unquote right places. You know, the spots that you find that you have a lot of faith in. Everything seems to work out right. For you, what makes the spot the right place? Is it more of a natural features, vegetation, terrain, you know, food, or is it sign? Are you looking at the sign, or is it kind of a mixture of both?
I think if you think like a mature buck, how they would go through the woods, you'll know it when you see it. It's the terrain features meets the habitat features of like laurel, where it narrows down, a funnel type place, or a natural barrier such as rocks that when you see it, you say, this looks like a big one would come through here. And that's when I start, you know, getting excited. And, you know, there's other factors you have to think about. How are you going to get into that place?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're looking around, is there signs of other people in there? Is there trash there? Is there places scraped out where people have been hunting on the ground or stands there? You know, I'm going to really look around when I find a place to make sure that there's nobody else around there. And then, you know, I'm not going to walk up that ridge and turn around. I've seen this so many times on public land that it's almost funny. You know, somebody will walk a mile up a ridge, and then they'll turn around and sit there for a day looking back down that same ridge, and they walk right up the top of it. And I don't think that's what you want to do, because you're putting down a lot of scent. You're running everything out of there that might have been there at the time you walked in there. You know, you got to try to find the way. Can you go up the hollow next to it? Can you go up the ridge next to it and then cross over? Is it possible to come over the top and look down the other side? That sort of thing. So, I mean, I think that's a big access is big, and hunting pressure is big too. When you find those places, there are other factors that are, you know, involved in it. And, you know, can you get the deer out after you kill it? It's another consideration. well, you know, I've never cut one up. I know a lot of people are going to that. So, and, you know, some people really believe in that. And I've got a pack ready to do that now, if that's what it takes, you know. But most of my places now that I pick are not to where they're a mile. I might walk in a mile, and it's generally uphill. But if I kill one, it's generally downhill to get that deer out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll hunt over a next ridge over or to the side of it, that sort of thing. But looking straight back down the way you came in, I don't do that. I mean, it's just you're lowering your odds because that scent, your scent can stay in there for much longer than people realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've seen it. I've done it. I've lived it. So.
Yeah. Jim, talking about...
Definitely don't, you know, the less scent, the better you put out in the mountains.
Yeah.
You don't want them to know you're there.
True, true. Talking about the spot, Jim, with what Parker asked, when do you find that? Because you had mentioned earlier that you don't do a lot of in-season scouting just because you don't want to lay down scent and different things like that. So do you do it post-season, summer scouting? How do you, when do you find that? That spot that makes you come back?
Well, I feel like the best time to scout is in the winter and early spring. Winter is the best. I mean, you know, I used to spend a whole day out there in the winter. I like that as much as I liked hunting. You know, I would pack a bag of, you know, waters, lunch, GPS, and I would make a day out of it. I just love that. I mean, you don't know what's on the next, what you're going to run into. And, you know, the more scouting you can do then and the more places, and then you go back and, you know, during the week when you got to work or, you know, in the evenings and stuff, and, you know, then you start thinking about, well, you know, why is this better than this other place that I found? And that sort of thing. And that's how I've kind of honed down places a lot over the years. So now I'm trying to hunt smarter now than just hunting, you know, scouting all over the place. I hone it down, and I really want to know the woods I hunt better than anybody else in those woods. So, and I think it, you know, I think that's an important factor, that you know what they're most likely to do, and it pays off in the end.
You know,
so,
that,
you know,
that makes a lot of sense, Jim, what you're saying. And I think even thinking about, like, turkey hunting too, there's been so many times when I've been working a bird, you know, going back and forth with him, and then the bird turns around and leaves, and I go walk to where he was, and it's, I can easily see why he didn't come to me. I think with deer hunting, it's the same way. You can have those spots that you're talking about that look perfect, but if you walk just a little ways over, you may see, you know, you may see a feature that prevents a deer from wanting to come to that spot that you found, you know, mm-hmm. And so it doesn't work out. So I think what you're saying, I think everybody can think of a place that they've hunted where something similar has happened. You know, in the mountains, you'll have, like, I can think of one spot specifically that I've just, like, man, I know there's got to be a buck here. I know there's got to be a deer living here. And then during turkey season, I'll walk around and I'll be like, well, no, he's not going to live here. Why would he be coming from here? There's a giant bluff that he'd have to jump down to get here, you know? And so knowing the property is huge. But, Jim, I also wanted to say, after our conversation the other day, I started thinking, you mentioned, you know, these spots that you, like, that you told the story about that deer that you hunted at 5 years and didn't even see a deer, and then you killed your biggest buck. I can think of so many spots that are now back on my radar because they were perfect. They seemed absolutely perfect to me. I threw a couple hunts at them, didn't see a deer, but I just know that it's got to be a good spot at some point for a big mature buck. And so a lot of spots came back to my radar when you mentioned that. And continuing to have that confidence, just because you don't see a deer doesn't mean you don't have confidence in that spot at some point, maybe just not for that year. And sometimes you just, it just takes throwing a sit at it, you know, just to see what's in the area. And so I think that mindset is huge. And we talk about confidence a lot, confidence being, you know, everything you need for the most part. If you don't have confidence, then your likelihood goes down. And I don't know what it is about it, but I think that's good. Drew, I can think of spots that me and you have discussed, mm-hmm. you know, we share spots back and forth a lot.
Right.
Where we'll be like, man, I don't know what the deal was. Wasn't any deer.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. You know? And I actually think it's more on us. We're just really impatient. Mm-hmm. You know, like we, and then we send it out to our buddies, be like, well, you know, where would you hunt? You know, if this was you. And then if you don't see a deer in the first couple sits, but I mean, you know, we're talking regularly to guys like Jim that, you know, are patient.
Yeah.
And like, patience kills big deer. That's what I'm learning with all our local legends guys.
Yeah.
Like, patience kills big deer, you know? And I always just have that mindset, like, what's on the next ridge though? You know, and that's why it's really hard for me.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm trying to learn is how to be patient, because you know, just like you said, Parker, like if the spot's there, the sign might not be there, but just like Jim was saying, because the acorns are not there, that especially in mountains,
uh-huh.
you know, the acorns aren't there, so they're going to go to where that's at, but that doesn't mean in the next year that it's not, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things I'm taking from this conversation with Jim is I have to be more patient. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to, because, man, how many big deer have walked by, you know, a week after I stopped sitting there?
Yeah.
That's what keeps me up at night.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Good stuff. Jim, kind of moving back towards your statement of food being everything, and in the mountains,
mm-hmm.
in the mountains specifically during deer season, acorns are, you know, a huge part of that food source. So, tell me about the acorns in the mountains. Do they tend to, you know, each year, do they drop around the same elevation? Does that elevation change year to year, or is it kind of scattered depending on the area that you're in?
In October, white oak acorns are the reign supreme. They're the ones that are favored by deer the most, and they drop earlier than the red oak acorns. And so you're going to kind of have that during in October, which is, for us, that's bow season here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're going to make your plans more based on where are the white oaks. And, you know, the groves of white oaks, where are they at? You know, most of them are going to be at the better, biggest, best trees are going to be in the valleys, the lower ravines, you know, that sort of place. So deer are going to be coming low to high in the mornings and the opposite in the evenings. So, but for me, I favor red oak acorns, and they're your, you know, they drop in October, up into late October, sometimes early mid-November. But they're, to me, they're what I call the killing acorns, because they're the ones you see during November when you have your gun season, when the rut's in. So, and they, you know, they can be in different places. They can be up at higher elevations more. They're the two that I concentrate on. We have, you know, some years that we have the chestnut oaks as well. They're not as favored as much, but, you know, if that's the only thing you have, then they're at a higher elevation a lot of times. And so you have to kind of pay attention to those too. But red oaks is what I like. And you can get movement from up and down, as I call it north-south movement. But also you might see more east-west movement in the mountains, where the deer, if there's a lot of acorns that year, they don't have to go down to lower elevations. Some deer I don't believe ever go down out of the mountains. And then others, the majority of them probably do a lot of north-south, go down the fields at night and that sort of thing. So, you know, I definitely set up higher in the mountain when possible, when there's a lot of acorns. Because I think the deer are right there amongst you when you're getting in there. Whereas some years when there's not as much food, they're going down to fields or, you know, they're on white oak acorns early. They're coming back up to you. So that's kind of one of the things that I look at as far as food goes.
Do you?
And then, you know, I've seen years when there was no food. And, you know, and that's another thing I do. I do an autopsy on every deer I kill to see what they're eating. Every one. Because I think it's really important.
Yeah. Do you put a whole lot of stock into the hunting the leeward side of a ridge? Do you find that mature bucks tend to, in the mountains, be on that leeward side and feed on that leeward side just because of the thermal advantages, the wind advantages, and things like that?
What do you mean by leeward?
So the opposite side of the wind. So the wind is blowing over that side where they're out of the wind.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a year like that and they're coming, you know, typically, you know, the mountains around here run north to south, most all of them do. And so your west side of the mountain is going to be thicker overall, and they're going to go a lot of times, they're going to bed on that west side. Your east side of the mountain is going to be more open woods. You're going to probably have more oak trees on that side, and they could come over. And, you know, I just take whatever it is, you know, whatever that mountain that I have access to, whatever it is, I tend to hunt on the west side mostly because that's just the way it, the access and the land lays.
Mm-hmm.
But not everything. And, you know, but you, I think you said the key word there, the wind. You have to be really careful of that. You know, a lot of people will say, well, where are you going to hunt tomorrow? You know, we're talking, we're texting or whatever. Where are you going to hunt tomorrow? And I say, well, it's going to depend on the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm on that west side thinking that I'm going to be hunting on the west side and you have a south component of the wind, it's going to be blowing down the mountain,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty much unfavorable in my estimation. And I don't worry as much about the morning thermals as well, because the morning thermals, I just usually set my stand up where I'm going to stand to where that taken into effect. I've gotten busted way more by afternoon thermal. And because, you know, if you go in there and you're hunting all day, which I don't do as much anymore because, again, I've gotten beat on that a lot by the deer. They win. Because if it's in your favor in the morning and, you know, it's blowing up the mountain, which is what I look for in the morning for deer that are coming north-south, which is the majority, then I try, you know, in the afternoon, you're going to get beat by that. Because that wind in the morning's great, in the afternoon it's not so great.
Yeah.
So you don't see me. I used to do that. Unless I'm in a really perfect spot, I don't tend to hunt all day.
Mm-hmm.
Now I used to do that a lot, and I can't say that it ever really ended up in my favor with that. So.
You know, I think that's true for a lot of people anywhere that there's terrain, you know, any type of rugged terrain.
Yeah, like steep terrain.
Steep terrain, yeah. Mountains, things like that. The times when I find that it can be in your favor to hunt all day is going to be in flatter areas, especially flatter areas that have water,
mm-hmm.
because there are like swamps. There are ways, which is a cool puzzle to put together.
Right.
There are ways when you have standing water somewhere to keep the thermals and the wind in your advantage from daylight till dark,
mm-hmm.
like for the whole day. There's ways that you can keep the thermals and the wind in your favor. In the mountains, though, like you're saying, Jim, it can be significantly more difficult. And I have friends that we had a guy, Lance Smathers, on the show last year. And I know people who do a lot of ground hunting in the mountains because they can move.
Mm-hmm.
They can move from place to place. Right. They're extremely mobile.
Right.
And they can move from place to place depending on what the thermals are doing. And they can just, if the thermals switch, take a look around, make sure there's no deer around, and move to a place that mm-hmm. the thermals are going to be more in their favor. And so I think in the mountains, that's a big, huge thing. And a lot of people tend to forget about it. It seems, Jim, I'm sure people out there are the same way. You feel really hardcore when you say, yeah, man, I set from daylight till dark. You know, it makes you feel good about yourself, like you worked hard for it. But a lot of times, it's in vain. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
For me, it has been. I can't say, you know, I just, if I look back on it, I can't remember a time where, you know, I've killed them at midday, but when the thermal switch coming down that mountain in the evening, I've been busted a lot.
Yeah.
So, and I tend to, you know, just hard learning, I'd call that, you know, it's just, you got to go back and try something else in the afternoon, and I kind of really think closer to feeding areas is where I've killed bucks in the afternoon. They're going, at least heading in that direction, and, you know, definitely really being, you know, cognizant of the wind, where it's going, and being higher than them, you know, picking the right spot. I think that's an art to it in itself, picking the right spot to sit down. Whether you're in a tree, you know, some people use climbing stands and carry them around. Some people, you know, have, you know, more set stands. And you know, hunting on the ground, I've killed probably as many big bucks on the ground as I have in a tree. So, I mean, it's just what your preference is there. And, you know, what your abilities are, you know, physically to do that. But, you know, I think picking the right spot, the exact right spot to sit down based on your circumstances at that point in time, I think that's really a key thing. You know, I always look for to be where I can look where I think the deer are coming, be above them, and the wind blowing, you know, not towards them, but away from them, you know. And will it work out? Again, there's not, with this stuff, there's nothing that's 100%. You're trying to do the best you can to increase your odds is what I'd say this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, you're going to be more successful over time. You know, somebody thinks they're going to go out and kill a huge buck every year, has either got a much better place than I've ever seen, or, you know, it's just not the way, it's just not realistic to feel like you're going to go out and kill a huge buck. Yeah, I always say mature buck. I'm looking for a buck that's 4.5 or older in where I'm at now. It used to be when I was younger, I started out just like anybody else is, you know, a one-year-old buck is good. And then, you know, it went to two-year-old, and then it went to three-year-old, and I realized, you know, where I'm at now, a four-year-old, they're almost like a completely different animal. So they don't think like any other deer.
Yeah. Now, out there in the mountains, are you finding that the mature bucks, as you kind of define for yourself out there, do you find that they typically bed on the tops of the mountains, or is there like a magic elevation that you find to be really good for a buck to bed at?
Well, you know, I'm a believer that all deer are different.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just depends. I mean, I think some, when they were younger, found places, or their mama doe took them higher up or whatever, you know, and they're more individual. So I think it's just a preference of, you know, where they favor. I don't think they go to the same place all the time, not based on my experience, where, you know, it seems like some places would just be completely wore out if the deer always were in that spot, you know, 365 days a year. I've never seen that, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think, you know, some of them, depending on the time of year, I always try to learn more. And, I've talked to plenty of people during the rut, a buck will go up on a point that's looking down over, you know, open woods, which I would call like more like a feeding area or whatever, and they'll look down there waiting on a doe to, you know, if they can see a doe, they'll go after it. And, you know, and then they can, you know, anything behind them, they'll usually set up where the wind's coming over their back so they can smell anything behind them and see anything in front of them. It's not only for does, but it's for a safety as well. So, you know, but, you know, I see that. I see them in thick places where you don't even really know they were there, you know, laurel thicket. I don't know that I've seen a whole lot of them bedding right on top of a mountain. So, because the wind is worse there. And then plus they wouldn't be able to hear as well. So, you know, we tend to, wind is a lot here because you're higher elevated. You can be down at 2,000 feet, 1,500 feet, and the wind's not that much. But you get up to 3,500 or 4,000 feet, and it's 30 or 40 miles an hour. So it's huge, you know, the difference. So I don't tend to, I haven't killed many on top of a mountain, and I don't tend to hunt there that much on top of a mountain. They do cross over. I can definitely tell you that, and I know people that have killed them. I've hunted some on top of a mountain, have seen some nice bucks, but it's not like they're walking along the top. They're more likely to be crossing over to one side or the other for a bedding or whatever reason. So they don't tend to just stay up there because of the wind, I think.
Yeah, that's...
Plus, a lot of people will walk up a mountain and get to the top, and then they'll walk that top. So I've seen that a lot in national forests around here, public land. And I try to use that to my advantage. I try to get three-quarters of the way up and figure they could run something off to me, or the deer, you know, will smell them or whatever, and, you know, you could be in a good position.
Now, where you're at, do you experience a lot of thing like human, I guess, human-caused I guess the right word would be, is there a lot of clear cuts or, you know, not, what's the word I'm looking for, Drew? Not natural
not
habitat, yeah. I guess maybe that's the
native,
right word.
Native.
Yeah, not native habitat
yeah.
or, like, do you find a lot of clear cuts or, like, pine stands or anything like that out there?
Well, we don't see too many clear cuts now unless you're on private land, which, I'm about a 50-50 hunter. I do private land, do public land about half and half. And you don't see the public land, you don't see the clear cuts anymore. It's very rare to see a clear cut. But I like edges. That's another thing, you know.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, edges of pines meeting hardwoods. Throw in, you know, some rocks, especially in the Blue Ridge Mountain part, a lot of rocks in there. All those features that might funnel a deer are great, you know, because that's what you're looking for. How can you find that spot? But, you know, I recently keep a spreadsheet, and it's got the date of, you know, the day I killed a deer. It's got the weather conditions, the wind, the temperature, you know, all those little things that you would, you know, think would be important. And I recently went back and added in, so, you know, where was I hunting? Was I on the main mountain? Was I on the Long Finger Ridge? Was I on like a secondary ridge, which I call those a Y, where the ridge splits? I call that a Y, and I'll set up right in there. I've killed quite a few deer with a Y, I also have, and this is pretty rare, but if you can find one, it's called a spoke. I call it a spoke, mm-hmm. where you have several ridges that come into the main mountain right there, and they come kind of together. You're increasing your odds.
Yeah.
So there's the kind of features that I'm looking for. And, again, it's if you find one of them, I think you should, like, hunt it as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, think of if 10 different ridges come into one ridge eventually on exactly at the main mountain, and you can cover all that or the most of it, then, I mean, it's got to be a good place. It's probability, you know. You're increasing your odds. So, but I look, you know, anytime you can get multiple features, edges, you know, terrain where it narrows down, where the mountain turns up, saddle, you know, anything. One of the things that spreadsheet told me when I added all the information is I've killed more deer on long finger ridges on the side of the hill, not on the top, because that's one of the things I wanted to learn, because I was like to favor the top because they're prettier usually. Prettier wood. And I'm like, you know what? I haven't killed that many on the top. That's one of the things that told me. You got to look down those side hills where that on the thicker side. I can't remember ever setting up on the open side of a ridge. I'm always going to be on the side where it's thicker, where your laurel and rhododendron type things are at. And that's where I've killed most of my deer. And, you know, those Ys and those spokes are a bonus there, so to speak, mm-hmm. because it just the odds get in your favor. The more ridges a deer can come up and filter into that one spot is good stuff.
You know, that's another thing that I'm – are you getting an echo? Do you hear that echo?
I'm not. I'm good.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out where it might be coming from. I can hear my voice echoing. Do you have me on speakerphone?
No.
That's weird. I don't think it would be on that one. Oh, well. We'll figure it out. One of the things that I was listening to you talking about, your spreadsheet and all that stuff, and thinking back to common things that I've seen with...
the local
people on Local Legends is having some type of documentation.
Warren Womack's the first one that I thought of whenever Jim started talking about it. Was that
and using it for this purpose, not just for memory's sake,
right.
but for hunting strategy sake. You know, having a list right there where you can look at it and say, what are these common denominators?
no pretty woods.
Yeah. Pretty woods is always a common denominator or something not to hunt.
Yeah, not to hunt.
But I think that's a big thing for people to hear. A lot of times it's hard to do that extra step.
Mm-hmm.
You've just busted your tail hunting that day, come home, you want to kick back, watch TV, go get you an iPad, even if it's just a notebook that you actually write it on, or you have your phone with you all the time, go into notes and start a note
mm-hmm.
that has all those things. And what you'll start to see is
you could even do it on any of your mapping software too.
Mapping software,
any of that stuff. You can put it there in the notes.
Absolutely, you can do all that stuff. And so I think a lot of people, you know, tend. I tell you what did it for me was starting the video and.
Mm-hmm.
Having
a video log of
everything that has happened, all the times I've been successful, and then really like spending time editing that video and putting maps together for that edit, and then seeing how similar every video is, you know, especially here in Alabama in my home range, everything seems to be similar, and that's helped me a ton to be able to, you know, establish these common denominators. And what you end up doing is you can think back to a deer that you killed, or an encounter that you had with a buck,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. on a whim or something like that, you know, earlier on before you knew much about deer hunting, and you're like, oh, okay, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah. And when you start finding those common denominators, and you can really do it like that. So I think that that is perhaps one of the most valuable things that a guy can do as a hardcore deer hunter, and most valuable things you can take from local legend series is doing some type of catalog, physical document where you can see everything. Mm-hmm. You can actually visualize everything. Jim, how long have you been doing that?
Well, I probably started this spreadsheet around the early 2000s.
Oh, good.
You know, I started mature buck hunting in 1990. Because, you know, I was killing bucks. But I couldn't seem to get over the hump of, you know, going to that next step. So in 1990, I said, I got to do something different. And that's when I started, you know, this journey, basically, of trying to figure out how to do that. And I think I've, you know, been pretty successful. And I didn't know as much then as I thought I knew a lot in 1990, but I didn't know near what I know now.
Yeah.
And based on all those factors, you know, I did the right things. And, you know, I don't hunt sign. I don't, like you said, you don't hunt pretty woods. You hunt, you know, where the deer are at in daylight. Not, you know, that's, if you hunt the sign, the majority of sign, to me, if you get a sign up in there where you're hunting above the more feeding areas and that sort of thing, that's a bonus. That you know, that's another thing that gives you the confidence to say that there's a big buck using in here. But, you know, most of your sign, your rubs, your scrapes and sort of things are going to be down in the valleys, you know, the prettier woods, the, you know, oak flats where there's a lot of acorns. But, you know, if somebody tells me I set up in this place, I could see 100 yards, I'm like, I don't think you're in the right place. You know, I don't try to, you know, tell them that other than just try to coach them on, you know, if you, what's above there, where does that go, you know, that sort of thing, and kind of lead them that way to where they might have a better chance to kill one. You know, I used to do the same thing with my cameras. I did, the cameras was a hobby for me to mm-hmm. get pictures of stuff. But then I realized a few years ago that, well, I can use these cameras to help me kill a deer. And I think I have done that the last few years.
Tell me about that. Like, what do you mean by that? You changed how you use your camera, because even people, a lot of people that I know of who are like you, they kill mature bucks. A lot of times they tend to put their cameras in high traffic areas to get more of an inventory, not necessarily anything else. So what did you start doing different with your cameras?
Well, and, you know, if I'm going to hunt a place, if I have a stand, whether it's on the ground or in a tree, I think is irrelevant. But I feel like that's a really good place. I'm going to have a camera near there, and I'm not going to, that camera is going to be somewhere in the vicinity, but where I go in access that stand. It's not going to be beyond that stand or down in the valley below that stand where I don't come in that way. Because, again, I'm a firm believer in not putting out any more scent than you have to. So I'm going to put that. It's not really an inventory, but it tells me that, you know, a mature buck is actually using in this, you know, right in here. So if that don't, if that don't cause you to have more confidence, then, you know, that's crazy. I mean, that should be a good selling point that you're in the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to do it just to get as many pictures as of, yeah, I got pictures of big ones, but when I get them now, I think I'm like, I'm in the ballpark here. I got a chance to kill this deer because it's right in here where I'm hunting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might not get as many bucks that way on camera, but you're in the, you know, you're there. You're within the right spot. And, you know, and again, it's a confidence builder. You can sit still. You know, if you don't have confidence, I could never sit still. That's why I've had people offer to take me to places during the season. And I would be like, oh, man, you, it sounds like you got a really good place there, but I'm not going to go with you. And they, you know, they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I have no confidence that I'm going to be sitting down in the right spot. So how am I going to sit there all day or all morning? It's just, to me, my mind's got to be right that I've done the work. And I'm pretty confident that this place is the right spot for me.
Exactly.
And I think that's everything. I just do. I just think the more time, and, you know, over time, I've, you know, when the other people that even that I've hunted with, you know, give it up, you know, I'm not going to go anymore. You know, that's why I've killed more of my mature buck the last week in November than any other week, because I'm still going to be out there sitting in those thick spots, and it kind of comes to me, I think, because the bucks that are still there are the smartest ones, maybe not necessarily the biggest ones, but the smartest ones, and they're going to be sneaking around in those thickets that on the side of the hills, the ones that are moving and, you know, sneaking around. They're not going to be running around crazy like they were in early November. And it comes to you. You know, you got a better chance of shooting them anyway if they're sneaking around than you do if they're running back and forth chasing does and acting all crazy to me.
That was another question I was going to ask you is when you kind of answered it right there. But I wouldn't mind digging into that just a little bit more. We spent a lot of time talking about, you know, the different types of acorns that you prefer hunting. You said the red oak acorns are what you like more. They preserve longer. You know, the acidity level is higher in them, so they stay preserved longer. And once all the white oak acorns are gone, they a lot of times switch to that. And you talked about, you know, going into late November after the rut's over, and you really kind of broke that down why you think that that's the best time. But is that really the time when you're like absolutely focused, like this is when I'm going to kill a big buck, or are you kind of just a like go hard all season long from October through December, January, whenever your season ends? Do you kind of give it all the same amount of effort, or is it really just that end of November when you're really focused on killing one?
Okay, well, I can definitely say that I'm going to hunt as much as I can from early October when bow season comes in. I'm definitely going to ramp it up in November, and if I'm in my prime, which I'm certainly not at now, I'm going to go as hard as I can the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have to pace myself. And, you know, I'm going to hunt as many days in November because that's when I've had success. And, you know, I've killed mature bucks in early November, mid-November, and then late November. So it can happen any time. I've killed bucks 2 days in a row after not seeing anything. So I think anybody that would know me and has hunted with me and everything would say that I'm probably one of the most persistent people to ever hit the woods. So I'm going to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to hunt till at the end of November, if I'm feel like I can hardly walk, then whether I've killed a deer or not, I feel like that I've done a good job. I've done what I wanted to do is give it all I got.
Yeah.
Because I just think that extra effort is the difference maker between me and most people.
Absolutely, it is. I think effort's everything, and time spent in the woods, whether you're turkey hunting, deer hunting, whatever, time spent in the woods is the most important thing, because even if you're in a not as good spot, the more days you go hunt, the more your opportunities go up.
You can't kill them from the couch.
Exactly. Right. I mean, that's where you get that. That's where you get that phrase from. Mm-hmm. That people say all the time. You can't kill them from the couch. Should I go hunt in the rain? Well, you can't kill them at home. You know, might as well go hunt in the rain. That doesn't mean your chances are going to be great. You know, but your chances definitely go up from staying home. And so yeah. I think that's really good stuff. But you talked a lot about that late November, and I'm curious to pick your brain on it because. I took my first ever trip to Missouri this past year, and I was there Thanksgiving week. I had heard all these great things about Missouri. Missouri's best. Missouri's awesome. You'll never want to hunt anywhere else once you hunt Missouri. I hunted Missouri that week at Thanksgiving, and I couldn't tell you how ready I was to come home and hunt my Alabama deer because Missouri kicked my tail end, and I didn't even see a live deer on the hoof, not even on the side of the road. I didn't see a live deer until the last day that I hunted Missouri. And it was a bunch of does. It wasn't even a buck. So what go a little bit deeper. You talked about hunting thick areas and things like that, but go a little bit deeper into that late November strategy. You know, the rut's over. You're hunting the smartest deer, the ones that lived. What the heck are you doing to be successful there in that time?
Because this is the first I've ever heard of the last week of November, a guy saying...
Well, and it also, you know, it's also the same as our last week of December.
Right.
You know, here in Alabama. Because our rut is almost a month after the rest of the world. And the end of
November... some parts of it.
Yeah, the end of December, the place where we hunt...
Right.
...is going to be that first part of December. Late December, it almost feels impossible to kill a buck, so... I really want to know Jim's, mm-hmm. you know, tactics and really kind of as our closing thought, just really dive deep into what exactly you're doing during that time frame to get on a big buck.
Well, I feel like it's all about what my whole strategy is. That, well, first of all, I think the rut still is in. At least the bucks think so.
Mm-hmm.
And they are still moving around the last week in November. And I have seen, rare, but I have seen bucks chasing those in late November. But most of it, they're just still on their feet, looking or cruising around, but it's more like sneaking around for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas mid-November, they're cruising around, you know, making mistakes. I just don't think they make as many mistakes then. I'm just there in their habitat, to where they feel comfortable walking around in the thicker spots. I'm not going to hunt around, you know, the more open spots for the most part. And I think, you know, a lot of people will tell you in Virginia that the rut is the between the 10th and the 15th is the peak. I don't think so. Based on my spreadsheet, my experience, I think the peak of the rut is around the 20th or 21st of November.
Hmm.
And then it starts waning down. But they're still on their feet. But where are they going to be on their feet? Because they're the survivors. So they're going to be on their feet in the thicker spots.
Yeah.
And, you know, using the terrain features, they're going to not be... I tend to have hunted higher than most people in the mountains. And then that's where they're more up in the mountains to me. They're not down lower into the fields and stuff, at least not in the daylight, you know. I've had lots of deer come by me, and their fields are 2 miles away, and had them come by me, you know, a half hour, an hour before daylight, and I'm sitting in a stand up on top, near the top of a mountain, three quarters of the way up. And you'd be surprised how many of them you hear walk by you just trying to get back up to wherever they're going to bed down at.
So basically what you're saying is you kind of go back to a early season core area tactic, that you find them more on their feet in those core areas, similar to what you would do in an October type situation.
Yeah, but I just think they're on their feet more. The weather's mm-hmm. cooler. It's still part of the rut. It's the waning down of the rut, but it's not, to me, I mean, I wouldn't do that in October for the most part because, first of all, you know, that's risky, you know, mm-hmm. as far as laying that scent down, being there where they could bust you kind of thing. I usually save those stands the highest and, you know, thickest. I don't hunt them very much early. You know, I'm down lower anyway, usually, probably. And, you know, when I get to the end, I'm going to hunt the nastiest places I can find. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say other than it's worked for me.
Yeah. So, that's all you can say. I want to know, we talked about transition lines and edges and things like that. Are you still taking that into consideration there, or are you just finding thick, nasty, and getting in the middle of it?
Everything. I mean, the more features you can come together with, mm-hmm. I think it's better, but, you know, it's the thickest, I think, is the biggest key. You know, I redid my spreadsheet here recently, you know, I thought about the places and the laurel and how the rhododendron and how thick it was in those places. You know, you're looking down into it, they feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're sneaking. They're not, they know there's predators in the woods. It just seems like to me, and they almost know when they make mistakes. So, just seems by their body language and stuff, they know they're not supposed to go out in the open woods.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jim, do you...
They're the survivors. They've survived through all of October and through the craziness of the early November, and, you know, they've smelled people in the woods. I just, you know, it's not their first rodeo, so to speak, and, you know, they make mistakes, but, you know, you got to be there to kind of pay, you know, capitalize on those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jim, do you set up on the outskirts of the thick stuff, or do you set up in the middle of it? Because you mentioned just now saying that you know you can see down into it. So are you on the edge shooting into it, or do you enter it? And if you do, what is your access look like? Is it pretty slow getting in there? What's that look like?
Well, if you're going to hunt on the ground, you can't hunt right in the middle of it. I got a couple places that I can think of right off the top of my mind right now that you can't see 10 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were on the ground, but if you get up in a stand, it opens up completely different, and you still thick, but you can see down through that stuff. So, and you know, it depends on, you know, if I'm hunting on the ground or if I'm in a tree. I have some places that I can get in a tree, I'm going to get right in the middle of it. And if it's not, then I'm going to be more on the edge of it, looking down to what I can see. Again, it's going to go back to, I'm going to pick a higher point than for the wind purposes, too, as much as for seeing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, I don't want to get busted. And I'm not going to go up through that. I'm going to come from the side or above, which mostly places I've got are from the side, to where they're not going to cross my trail and smell me. Yeah, you know, I don't use any kind of scent, and you can't even in Virginia now use like doe and heat and that sort of stuff. I've tried all that stuff in the past when it was legal, and I've seen deer that it made them mad, and I've seen a lot of deer that scared them or put them on 100% high alert, which I don't want to do. I don't want them to know anything's there. I want them to be in that they feel comfortable walking up through there, that they don't have a care in the world. So I think that's the best way to do it, because then you know they're not going to be in as big a hurry, and you know you're going to get a better shot, which is another thing. You know, these things don't give you very long to decide whether you're going to shoot and being able to shoot. I think Devin Duncan will tell you that too.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's you got to make a quick snap decision, and then you got to find the first opening. I don't wait for a perfect shot, because my experience is tended to not give you a perfect shot. So I take the circumstances as they are, the first opening they walk through, I shoot them walking. And I, you know, I don't shoot very many running, but I'll shoot them walking. If they stand still, that's a bonus. So they tend to stop behind stuff, trees, bushes. It's just, that's the nature of the mature buck.
You know, that's something that I've found to be true. In my videos, I'll take shots and people will say things like, shouldn't have taken that shot, or you should have, you know, mad at him or whatever. Everybody's always got a critique of how you should take the shot. But one thing that most people don't take into account, most people are hunting, you know, out here, most people are hunting bait piles, corn piles, something like that, where you have perfect shot opportunities. But for the public land, you know, guy, run and gun, you know, hunting the thickest areas, whatever, you don't have that opportunity. And even Ranch Ferry on YouTube, the guy that talks about, you know, building heavy arrow setups and stuff like that, it's one of the key factors in his whole thing is, you know, you don't have time sometimes to wait for the perfect quarter to weigh broadside shot. You have to take those quarter two shots if you need to. And, you know, if you're hunting the thickest areas, you're going to be taking shots that are not wide open. And so people have to understand, like, most of the people who are saying all this stuff probably don't kill bucks either. So, That's how you have to do it. And I find that to be the case with a lot of the guys like yourself, Jim, that we talk to, who, you know, have a good track record for killing big bucks, hunting thick areas, that you have to take every opportunity that you get.
Kill them the first chance you get.
Yeah, you can't just be picky about all that stuff.
I tell the people that hunt with me, I tell them, you see the deer, you decide you're going to shoot it, you pull your gun out in front of that deer where you think he's going to cross through a little bit of an opening there, and when his shoulder steps into that, you shoot. And that's the way I believe in it. You know, I had a buddy of mine, he had a 10-pointer, and he came through a really good spot that I've killed a deer there before, and a couple other of my buddies had killed a deer out of that stand before, and it was a nice, thick 10-pointer, and that deer was just kind of on a mission. And you know what that is, they're going somewhere, and they're not going to stop. And it never did, and he never shot. It went over the ridge and up the next ridge, and another guy shot it, killed it. And, you know, he could have got that deer, but he, you know, his experience was that, you know, normally they stop, but this one was a big, probably a 5 or 6 year old 10-pointer, and he just wasn't. He was going somewhere. I wouldn't say he was dead in rut, because I don't think he was, but he knew he was supposed to get somewhere out of those woods, because it's pretty heavily hunted. He was coming from the farmland below and heading up to where he was supposed to be at already, and he was running late. And, you know, he learned a lesson that day that you gotta keep, you know, you gotta take the first good shot, because there was some good shots, because I've hunted that stand quite a bit, and there was an opportunity or two there. But he waited for the perfect shot. And I don't think you can do that with these deer.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. Well, Jim, I think we're going to be able to end it on that note, dude, unless there's anything else that you want to add to what we've talked about. But I feel like we've covered a pretty wide range of topics for hunting mountain bucks, probably anywhere where a guy would find mountains or terrain.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we covered a lot of that.
Yeah. Can I say... just one, make one point.
Absolutely.
Before we, I did see on a Facebook post that I made about my spreadsheet where a guy said that he didn't think putting the data down for dead deer would be a big help for him. And I can see where he's coming from. I really do. That deer's already dead. So how can that help you? But I think it's one of the most important things that you can do is, you know, if you kill a big deer, why did you kill that deer? What was the reasons? Where was he coming from? Where was he going to? And, you know, because if you find a spot like that, it's very likely to be a good spot for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of disagreed with that point, because I think a dead deer can tell you a whole lot. I got quite a few of them on my wall right here that I always look up at them and say, you know, this is, you know, where were you going? What was you doing? And that's helped me. I feel like it has.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so if people have been successful, you know, they need to think about that and why that was. And that could be a spot. You know, I've heard over the years of people killing 30 and 40 deer out of the same spot, you know. So think about that. And that might be something that would be helpful, you know, a spot like that, or find some more spots like that. So that are similar, and you know, stick with them, and I think it, you know, might help you.
Absolutely, yeah, that's good stuff, man. I completely agree with you. I think the same thing about when I look at different deer that I've got on the wall or whatever. I think the exact same thing, and I think a lot of people who continuously are consistent in killing bucks kind of have the same mindset of when you kill one, you can put that down on your list of things that, like, why did he do this? Even if you never kill another deer in that spot, the lessons that you learn and the takeaways that you have from being successful or having an encounter can be a pretty big thing. And so I think that's a pretty big aspect, I guess, of hunting mature bucks is being able to put those pieces together in the future.
Yeah, man. It was that's some good stuff there. Good stuff. And what I love about it is that it doesn't just have to apply just to mountain bucks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, what I love about what Jim's saying too is that it's really simple when you break it down. You know, it's not necessarily as like in depth as you going and finding like the single bed, you know, that the buck is bedding in. You know, hey, find the thick side of the ridge, get in the thick stuff, and be patient, and you'll have a decent chance of seeing a pretty good buck.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you know,
absolutely.
And then having the right mindset, it was solid stuff.
Well, I hope I've helped a little bit.
Absolutely, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, you know, some of those tactics. I think a lot of people are going to really get a lot of that. We typically have a lot of people that hunt more terrain type areas, and so people really enjoy mountain buck episodes for sure.
I appreciate y'all.
Thanks, Jim, so much, man.
Thank
you
to me. Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. You have a good one, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. As always, a big shout out to all of our partners, Spartan Forge, Tethered, New Canoe, and Scree Gear. You can keep up with Southern Ground Hunting by following us on Facebook and Instagram or subscribing to the YouTube channel. And be sure to check out southerngroundhunting.com to pick up some of our merch. I truly hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you here again next week. Remember that God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.